Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Atlin Humans of Data series, where we're joined by data leaders around the world as they openly share their challenges, hacks, tips, and tricks to help us build a better world with data and better data teams as we do that. In today's episode, we're joined by Mani, who's currently the head of category marketing and analytics at BigBasket, and Pushkarni, who's a senior consultant at BigBasket. Thank you so much for joining us today, Mani and Pushkarni.
Thank you for having us.
Let's start out with just a quick introduction of your backgrounds and how you got sort of involved in the world of data science. Just help the audience understand a little bit about what your journeys with data science so far have looked like.
Sure. I'll start with my quick introduction and then I'll have Pushkarni walk you through her background. I've been with BigBasket for about 5 years. I'm part of the analytics team. Pushkarni is my colleague. We have a very small team of about 8 people that are driving analytics for the entire organization. We support all businesses within BigBasket. The team works very closely. We work with the founders and I work on very interesting strategic, tactical, operational problems where data can be applied. And the culture of data-driven decision-making is driven top-down in the organization and it makes it very interesting and challenging to come to work and make a difference. So that's quickly my background.
Pushkarni, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey?
So I'm a complete born and brought up in Bangalore. I've been living here since a long time. And I completed my engineering in 2016 from MS Ramaya Engineering College. So I was a campus hire for BigBasket. And since then, I've been working with the analytics team with Mani and the other 7 members. It's been close to 4 years now. And in this role, we've worked with multiple entities within the business. We work with marketing, we work with category, we work with replenishment. And off late, I've been spending a lot of time on, again, supply chain and the operations teams. So that's actually a very quick introduction for me. We can proceed to the next portion.
Awesome. And actually, while we're at that, why don't you tell us a little bit about your current data and analytics team? What are the kinds of profiles of people on the team? What are the kinds of projects that you end up taking on? Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. I think short of it, it'll be interesting to also get Pushkarni's thoughts on that as well. As I said earlier, very small team, 8 of us. What we tried doing is my colleague and I, a colleague of ours called Pooja, who started the analytics team back in 2013 when I came on board. We had to focus on hiring from campus, particularly very good colleges in Bangalore without necessarily having to go to IITs and NITs. And that's where we've been able to hire our colleagues. So far, first batch of people came from 2015 batch from MS Ramaya. 3 graduates we brought on board and it turned out to be a fantastic success. They brought in a fantastic analytical thinking, coupled with quantitative problem solving, very logical reason thinking. And along with that, demonstrated 3 principles that we clearly look for in individuals. One is ownership, second is attention to detail, and third is proactiveness. It's a small team. We don't follow up with each other on what's going on. People take ownership. Those are very critical traits. They fail independent in what they do. And the first batch of graduates that we brought on board did a fantastic job, and it sort of gave us the confidence to go back to campus. And the second day, we brought Pushkarni on board. And it's continued to be a great story. And since then, every year, we go to campus and we onboard fresh graduates. Ramaya has been a fantastic hunting ground for us. Continue to get people from there. We begin to diversify now and bring in people with solid data science background as well. Programs such as UpGrad, Great Lakes, etc., or Manipal, or hiring graduates from there as well. What the team does is predominantly business analysis. It's very applied analytics. It's not analytics for the sake of analytics. It's not report generation or report factory. I go back to the Gartner's model, which talks about analytics maturity. So there's descriptive analytics, which is all the reports, dashboards, etc. To answer questions on what happened, looking at the past. And there's the diagnostic analytics, which talks about what is happening, right? Doing root cause analysis, etc. Emerging out of that, you get what is called predictive analytics, which is on forecasting, simulation, and so on. And then you get a prescriptive analytics, which is where you make recommendations. So we focus on work across the spectrum, but what we try doing is the descriptive analytics, which is useful to business to understand the state of the business, is automated. And therefore, about 10 to 20% of our time then goes in automating these repeated deliverables that allows the business teams to get those inputs on a daily basis, take actions on those. Focusing a lot more on the diagnostic, 30-40% of the effort goes into diagnostic because interesting trends emerge all the time and there are questions from business saying, what is happening here? Why is this happening in this manner? Can you help us deep dive? A few examples. Chennai, why is Chennai, why are SWATs closing early in Chennai while in Bangalore we are being reduced capacity available? And that requires us to deep dive and sort of understand what's going on there and draw insights from that. And some of those insights get, translated to actions as well as help us in the next phase of analytics, which is the predictive and prescriptive. Predictive and prescriptive, the team does a variety of work. We build forecasting models for some very interesting problems. The team worked on a very interesting model that helps predict a great deal of accuracy. How much of fresh fruits, fresh vegetables to keep in inventory. Unlike non-perishable items where you could take the risk of keeping a little more than what is needed and carry on with the leftover inventory, in perishable can take that risk.
Yeah.
Leafies, fresh fruit, etc. have shorter shelf life. And so anything that you stock in excess is likely to sort of become wastage. But you also try avoiding wastage and keep less than what is necessary, then customers are going to have a bad experience because of shorter stock. We built a model that sort of balances between the both and interesting results from the pilot so far. Pushpay built what we call a smart basket, a very smart shopping list for customers that improves the shopping experience for customers. Customers that use smart basket see that they are able to finish their shopping in 40% less time compared to people that don't use smart basket and also are able to avoid missing items. The system understands your buying behavior and recommends products. So that's another example, recommendation engines, and looking at how are ads working for us on TV, print, media, or a variety of things that the team does. We support all teams within the organization, all businesses, like Pushpay said, category teams, marketing teams, supply chain teams, ops teams, customer support teams, projects teams, etc. So a variety of teams work with the data that we build, you know, whether the data is right or wrong, but actually focus on actions that the data asks them to work on, right? So that's quickly, you know, about the team and what we do.
That is extremely cool. So even though you're just an 8-member team, it seems like you're basically supporting everything from analytics all the way to data science use cases for the entire company, which at the size and scale of Big Basket is actually pretty, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah. And, you know, Pushpay can talk about the partner ecosystem that we have. Yeah, Pushpay.
Like you mentioned, it's just an 8-member team, right? That supports business requirements for analytics requirements for different business teams, as well as regional teams. We are in 25 cities right now. So anything, you know, we monitor sales, we monitor conversion and our internal and customer experience metrics. So we partner with a couple of, you know, third-party companies for our data warehousing solutions. Right? Because the 8 of us, we would ideally want to spend all our time in actually getting what we call the DAI or the definitive actionable insights, as we call them, right? Any analysis that we do as a team, it's presented to the business teams with actionable insights. So we tell them root cause of a problem. We pinpoint exactly the root cause of the problem. And, you know, we point them to the whatever is the recommended step. And this has to be absolutely actionable by people working on the ground, the business teams that are working on the ground. So obviously, we have a couple of partners that help us, technology partners that help us, you know, build our data warehouse, manage our data warehouse, host all the data, all the transactional and also the clickstream data that we get from all the customer interactions, right? Every click on the Big Basket app or the Big Basket website is stored along with the attributes of the member, along with whichever city or whatever place they're browsing from and so on. So obviously, it's a lot of you know, data cleaning, data maintaining activity, which we take a third party help. And also some of the models that we've developed, right? Like Mani mentioned, the perishable forecasting model, you know, wherein we predict demand that we are likely to receive for the next days. So you know, all of these need to be sent. The model runs, it generates demand. It obviously has to be sent to the team that is in charge of buying and merchandising. You know, there are APIs and there's a lot of tech effort involved so that everything gets to the ground teams in time, in the format that they require. So that to the extent possible, we try to automate things. So we also work with partners for building VIs for data transfer so that, you know, there's minimum, you know, manual intervention and all of these.
That's awesome. So basically the internal team is focused as much on the business problems and actionable for the business problems. And then you try and figure out engineering partners and tech partners that can come help support you on the engineering effort. On that note, just one open-ended question that I'd love to sort of understand from you. What seems very interesting to me about your model is that you have built out a lot of homegrown talent. It seems like you've hired people right out of college and then, you know, brought them into data science. And it seems like you've still built out an extremely agile team. Tell us a little bit about what do you think it takes to really build a high quality data team, an agile data team that can really support the business and be a partner to the business in their needs.
We're learning and we're trying to get better at it. But we've learned that four attributes typically matter when it comes to building a high quality data team. Number one is people. The other is, you know, setting up a process that guarantees that the outputs and the outcomes from the analytics team are of high quality. Making choices on technology and building a culture that is very focused on hypothesis-driven approach. So I'll take a minute to cover each of those. It takes a combination of talents. A great analytics team needs data scientists, data engineers, data architects. They're hard to groom, they're hard to retain because the data science market is fairly hot. People, you know, move for a variety of reasons, compensation, experience, skills, etc. It's important that you find the right people that are committed to making a difference in the long term and bring them on board. And secondly, this again, figuring out what do you want to do in-house and what do you want to do with help from third parties. In our case, we made the choice that the data scientists, business analysts will be in-house. Data engineers, data architects will get help from outside, right? So that's a call that we made that worked well. Hiring people with the right attitude has become another important thing that we realized. I keep talking about these three traits: attention to detail, ownership, and proactiveness. Each of this has very, very specific meaning in the world of Big Basket, and people that demonstrate this, even in their college work, in the project work that they do, help us recognize people that are great talent. Process in a startup becomes very critical because there is need for speed, agility, but you also want to do this in a rigorous manner, and you've got to strike a balance between both. Do you do this very quickly or do you do this very rigorously? If you do this rigorously, you want to take time, but you need this out very quickly. And so the team quickly understands how to operate on this. Put out a version one very quickly, that means need for speed, and then iterate on it to build the rigor in that. We try in removing manual involvement from the process. We automate to the extent possible so that the whole production pipeline runs smoothly with no human intervention at all. technology becomes another important lever and a challenge as well. Variety of technology platforms, here on AWS platform, there are choices emerging every day, and you'll have to build solutions that work with the interoperability principle. Many of our outputs get consumed by the production system, so we focus on that, it's a constant challenge. Therefore, building a technology platform by picking the right tools and not necessarily focusing on what is cool is very important. Lastly, after, anytime we get requests from teams about data, et cetera, we actually sort of work with them in a collaborative manner, pose the question to them about what is the new business question that they're trying to answer, and start with the question and figure out what data will help answer that business question. And therefore, start with hypothesis and through that build a data-driven culture that's worked very well. Focus on impact instead of coolness. It's very important. It's very easy to say that, but very hard to drive that message. And so that's another thing that we've built over the last 5 years to build a high-quality data team.
This is very cool and resonates, I think, with a lot of the core challenges that I think data leaders are facing today. Tell us a little bit about some of the actionable things that you did from sort of a technology perspective, or even the culture perspective, in terms of what you were saying around how to make sure people focus on impact rather than building the cool sounding model. Tell us a little bit about just actionable things you implemented in those choices as you built out the team.
Sure. A couple of examples. One example is the forecasting problem that we're talking about. It's a very nice, interesting algorithm that we figured out is very, very relevant to products such as this. Products that have shelf life. It could be fashion, medicine, it could be perishables. And when we played around with it, it was a fantastic tool and a fantastic variant of the existing algorithm that we were using. Mm-hmm. What clearly the leaders focused on was, it's not about the fact that this algorithm is sort of interesting and it's cool to use that, but what impact would it deliver, right? Therefore, we actually had to build this to a pilot and demonstrate the fact that the model minimized both the attributes that are critical for us in our forecasting model. One is wastage and the other is out of stock experience for our customers. So this algorithm simultaneously minimizes both, and we had to do a pilot and demonstrate the fact that the algorithm worked better, and it was in fact built on the surface. That's one example. The other example is work that Pushpini does, particularly, which focuses on a new business model that we have built. This brings delivery very close to the customers and allows us to deliver a very large assortment of products to the customers within a short period of time, anywhere from 4 to 6 hours, depending on availability. This is a fairly powerful model and a move from what we used to do historically, which was delivery within 24 to 48 hours. And in this model, there are multiple levers that need to be focused on. We keep talking about the fact that the old model was a simple automobile that had a brake, a clutch, an accelerator, and a steering wheel, and you had to manage that, whereas this is kind of a jumbo jet. So multiple levers that you'll have to keep your eyes on, monitor and take actions accordingly. So in that context, we've identified as a variety of levers that become very critical. Some examples are understanding how customers are behaving and accordingly planning your logistics mix. Use a combination of vans, bikes, and having the right mix is very, very critical. Similarly, the coverage that you offer to the customers determines how your logistics operates, what the experience that customers get, what assortment do you keep in the closest facility to the customers, and what you push to the DC as long tail is very, very critical. So Pushpini is built what we internally call a levers guide that looks at each of these performance levers, which is the vehicle mix, which is coverage that you offer to the customers, what could be near the customers, what could be in the long tail. Defining this for each of the facilities, there are 60 such facilities across the country right now, and monitoring this and recommending right assortment, right vehicle mix, etc. is what Pushpini drives, and that made this business model actually turn out to be a very, very great mix of delivering superior customer experience and also being very cost effective for the organization. So those are examples of work that we do.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And so let's jump in actually into what happened, a couple of months ago, right? COVID. And one of the biggest businesses that I think saw the impact of that was the work that you guys do at BigBasket. So tell us about what happened in those initial few weeks. How did BigBasket data team immediately respond to the pandemic situation? What were the immediate steps that you took in those early days to deal with the crisis and help the business deal with the crisis?
Sure. Pushpini's going to cover that, but I'll pull up some talking points that may be relevant as we go through it. What do you think?
Yeah. So I'll first talk about what BigBasket did and get into what the data analytics team did within that. So I think as the situation evolved, we had to continuously change our processes and change our product. And we continue to do so, actually. Some of these changes were customer facing, and some of these were internal process related changes to improve efficiency, our operations and supply chain. Actually, one of the first challenges that we faced was immediately after the lockdown was announced, which was, I think, the last week of March. What we saw was there was a sudden surge in the number of visitors to our website and the app. And this was many folds of what we had ever seen as the highest traffic on any given day. And when so many customers come onto the site, our server should be capable of rendering all the relevant products, relevant prices, and so on. So we faced, initially, there's some technological infrastructure issues that we faced. We took a call to allow only existing BigBasket registered customers to you know, come on the app and place an order. But this was for a very brief period, just about 2 days or so. And, you know, we essentially bought ourselves some time scale up to quickly ramp up our infrastructure, to quickly increase the number of servers that, you know, support our website and application. So the second challenge that we faced actually was with the surge in demand, right? We also had some manpower constraints. And by manpower constraints, I mean the associates who work at the warehouses to pick the orders, or the associates that, you know, actually do the last mile delivery for us, right? So suddenly we had challenges there. And honestly, I think it's a lot trickier to ramp up manpower compared to, you know, ramping up infrastructure or technology. You can select a downtime and quickly add a few servers, but that doesn't work for adding manpower to, you know, for delivery and so on. Also because it's a customer-facing job. The last mile delivery is a customer-facing job. There's a certain training required. So we knew that for the next few weeks, this would remain a challenge. Also, we knew that, you know, there would always be a portion of demand that we would not be able to serve during the next 2-3 weeks. You know, we took the decision. So now which portion of the demand do we serve? Which one do we deprioritize for the moment? You know, BigBasket's been in existence for about 9-10 years. And in this journey, we have a few customers who've been shopping with us regularly, month on month, for all their grocery and household supplies. So these are the loyal customers. And we wanted to make sure they don't feel disappointed during this hour of need. So we quickly built a feature which is called the priority slot feature. Mm-hmm. Which essentially means, you know, when a loyal customer, which is, you know, defined by the tenure with BigBasket and many other elements. So when they come on the app, right, we make sure that there's a certain delivery capacity that's reserved for them so that they can place their orders in this time. So we did that. But at the same time, we were just choosing who to deliver, but not exactly maximizing the customers that we could deliver. So we built, you know, quite a few features. One interesting thing that we did was we built this bulk delivery model or apartment service model. In most of the tier one cities like Bangalore or Mumbai, Gurgaon, and so on, a large percentage of the population stays in apartment complexes, or at least a large percentage of BigBasket population stays in apartment complexes. And, you know, we could consolidate all the orders that belong to one apartment complex and send it as one shipment, rather than have 50 separate orders being delivered by 50 separate people at different times of the day. We introduced this model wherein, you know, all customers belonging to one apartment could place one consolidated order. That way, you know, even with the manpower constraints that we had, we could kind of maximize the reach. We could maximize the number of customers that, you know, we could serve during this time. So that was one feature that we introduced. And we made quite a few changes to our, you know, merchandising as well. So for instance, the other challenge that we faced in terms of manpower was the associates that were available, you know, at our warehouses to pick the items for the orders, right? If you've shopped on BigBasket app, you'll kind of notice that we typically offer an assortment of about close to 20,000 products. You know, everything from your daily essentials of, you know, cooking essentials like salt and sugar to home appliances, kitchen appliances to, you know, premium luxury beauty products, you know, international products and so on. We took the decision to, you know, deliver only essentials during this time to, again, manage the picking, you know, part of the portion efficiently. We reduced the assortment to about 3,000 essentials. That way, you know, with the same staff that we had, we could actually still pick for more orders and therefore, you know, maximize the number of people that we could cater to. So these were, you know, some of the very few, I mentioned very few, and you can see on the slides that we had quite a few features rolled out. But also, I think we made quite a few changes to our processes. I think very initially, even probably before the lockdown was announced, we had to ensure we had the best standards of hygiene and, you know, cleanliness maintained at all our facilities. For instance, everything, there were processes put in place to ensure all delivery vans or warehouses were sanitized and, you know, people were thermally scanned while entering the warehouses and so on. They were provided with masks and sanitizers, obviously, while stepping out for delivery. We also introduced, you know, a contactless delivery feature. The delivery person will just leave the order outside the customer's doorstep and ring the bell and go away. Essentially, this is, you know, to achieve social distancing and minimize the risk of spread. We also started accepting only prepaid orders to further decrease the interaction.
I don't know whether this is a good problem to have or a bad problem to have, that you have to reduce the amount of demand that you have to match supply. Tell me a little bit, while all of this was happening, and obviously BigBasket, I think, made huge strides to be able to enable that, even in the new world with the lockdown, ensuring that customers are able to get their essentials delivered to their home during sort of these times. What was changing for the analytics team? Because I'm guessing every one of these things that you introduced, right from saying, I only want my loyal, or for my loyal customers, I want to sort of give out this delivery window and demand, supply for them. What was changing for you internally as an analytics team, and how are you sort of building out some of this stuff internally from an analytics and data science perspective?
I'll help with that. So a few quick follow-ups, right? A couple of things changed dramatically for us. One is, typically, what would happen is our data volumes were, of a certain range, and in this period, the data volumes, in fact, them about 4x, 5x. So we had to quickly scale up the infrastructure to support these data volumes. And we had to do this really, really quick because there was very important data that is needed by the business that could have helped improve the customer experience, and we didn't want to miss out that data. So this is like fixing a train when the train is running, or fixing an airline when the flight is actually, in the air, right? And so we had to do some of those changes very, very rapidly. Number two is that even in a agile environment such as us, some of these analysis would take a couple of days to turn around. We would look at the data, make sure that there was some consistent patterns that we saw for at least 2-3 days, or if not for a week or so, and then make definitive decisions. In this time frame, the time available for anyone, be it our product team, engineering team, or the supply chain team, or the analytics team, came down to a few hours. So you look at data that, yesterday, try drawing long-term conclusions from that to say this is going to pan out for the next few days, and so we'll have to quickly take some actions. For example, when it came to loyal customers, we began to see a drop in the percentage of loyal customers that were able to place orders. Now, is that a one-day pattern? You wait for 7 days and ruin the experience for customers, or do you quickly take a look at it and say that, this is not trending very well, and we'll have to take some actions quickly on that, right? So decisions are made very, very quickly using, a limited period of information and taking calls or making bets on actions that had to be taken by some of the important transformations that we saw in this.
Got it. Very cool. So it seems like both the business started being able to make decisions, or decision-making speed needed to improve. And so from an analytics perspective, you needed to say, how do I use as much data as I have right now to be able to make the most informed decision as we go along?
Right. And the other third important thing that we began to notice is that in normal times, you could prioritize requests that are coming in, right? You could say, replacement team needs a quick response on this. We'll close this out and then talk to the merchandising team and then have the marketing team. But at this point, you're getting requests from all teams, and all of them are equally important. And how do you prioritize? How do you sort of work on it, right? All at the same time. The merchandising team needs advice on assortment. The marketing team needs information on customers that they have to reach out to. And at the same time, the supply chain team is looking for information on what is the right mix that they should have. So all questions coming in simultaneously. How do you look at all of this and draw quick conclusions and support all of them in real time so that they could take action? That's another thing that we began to learn and appreciate and take as a challenge and work on.
But actually, how were you prioritizing? I'm guessing you're getting like requests from every team in the company. How were you prioritizing and saying, this is what I need to work on first versus second?
Over a period of time, we built teams in a manner where each team knows the functions that they're supporting. So, Pulshari knows the teams that we support, one of the other team members, each team leader in the team knows the teams that they're supporting. So, that helped. So, clearly, having a structure, even if we were a small team, having a sense of ownership helped. And second is, we also fortunately brought on board a few interns. And we typically do long-term interns. We don't do one-month internship, two-month internship, because we believe that the internship should be immersive in nature, and that's when people really get a sense of the problem and are fully involved in the problems that we face and learn from that experience. So we do six-month internships. About 3 months ago, we had brought on board interns, and they became very helpful. They had come to speed, and they were able to quickly support Pushkini and the other team leaders with quick turnaround on these requests. So these two things that we did, one historically and the other, coincidentally, that happened a few months ago, helped us out.
That's a fantastic internship story for them. I think, as interns, I worked at Big Basket during the COVID crisis. That must have been crazy. And tell me a little bit about how, as the situation evolved, after the first couple of weeks when things started when people started realizing that this is the new normal and it's probably going to be here to last for some time, how did the role of data science change with that emerging scenario?
I'm going to quickly share some thoughts on that, and then I'll let Pushkini cover the details. We are still figuring out what is the new normal. And I keep saying this to anyone that wants us to make a prediction, forecast, etc. This is once in a century event. There is not a prior data that you can look at and model from that. This is a very different type of event, a pandemic. And how it's going to play out, if anyone attempts to forecast, what I will quote is what a wise man said many years ago, that all forecasts are wrong, right? And some are particularly wrong, and therefore, anyone that's going to make predictions on how the pandemic is going to play out, what is the new normal is going to be, are making big bets and are quite likely to be wrong. What we're looking at is taking this a week at a time, a fortnight at a time, right, to say, here's the most recent trends, how is it going to play out? For example, we clearly, as Pushkini pointed out, saw a dip in the support that we were getting from our associates. Many of them had challenges, wanted to go back home, couldn't travel, or whatever the case may be. And therefore, we quickly did some actions to mitigate the risk that was coming from that. But over the last few days, associate numbers have gone up, and understandably, that allows us to get to a new level of normality, closer to what it used to be before COVID. But again, we know that this is the situation for the next couple of weeks, so let's plan using this as the new state and see how this plays out. And then again, 2 weeks later, plan again for what may happen after that, right? Because regulations are evolving, laws are evolving, lockdown conditions are evolving, and therefore, to anything as being a pattern going forward would be foolish, and therefore we're taking things as they come. But a few other call-outs in terms of what we've learned. Again, I'm going to pull up a slide that might be relevant here, and I'll have Bhushan to cover that.
Yeah, so more on, you know, getting into some details of what the data analytics team did, you know, during the situation. Was Mani mentioned the situation was evolving every day, you know, was a new definition of the new normal, essentially. So it became very important for us to, you know, monitor and report the sales metrics, for instance, conversion and internal metrics like that, or even customer experience metrics, right? For instance, product availability, slot availability, or lead times for delivery and so on. It became very important for us to monitor these on a daily level. And, you know, the role of analytics doesn't end right there. So, you know, when something looked a little odd or something looked a little unexpected, we would do multiple deep dives, you know, multiple cuts of data using everything we had and, you know, essentially pinpoint the root causes, like I mentioned earlier, and take it up to the business team. You know, while this became like a new routine for us to look at, you know, what happened yesterday and what are the actionable insights for, you know, each of the regions. So again, within the team, we also have divided responsibilities in terms of, you know, I look at certain regions and, you know, the other team members look at other regions and so on. So we looked at these things. And also, I think every new feature that I spoke about earlier, right? So whether it was reducing the assortment from 20,000 to 3,000. So we needed an analytics input to say, you know, what do we classify as essentials? What do we stock in each of the cities? And obviously these differ from cities. There's no one 3K product set that works pan India, right? So all of these, you know, all of these decisions, as well as the, you know, how much capacity to reserve for loyal customers. And because the situation keeps changing, right, there are multiple tweaks that need to be made at, you know, in a daily level and so on. And further, I think with the challenges that we had in terms of manpower, there were multiple ideas on how to increase efficiency and so on. So, you know, the analytics team's focus was more on predicting the outcome if each of these ideas were to be implemented, right? Because we didn't have a lot of time to implement each of these and, you know, test it out for ourselves. So using the data, you know, we essentially simulated all the what if scenarios. You know, what if we deliver orders through bike and van? What if we route more through bike? What would happen to, you know, availability of stocks? What would happen to internal metrics like, you know, efficiency of a delivery agent or, you know, customer experience metrics like, you know, lead times to delivery and so on. And also, you know, deciding, you know, can the customer experience benefit offset the, you know, incremental cost that we see and so on. So I think while the business teams were around the clock working on the ground to make changes, it also required analytics team to stay on toes to support those decisions, right, on some of these major things. And something that is interesting and what I take pride in also is that most of these features, right, the decisions were completely data driven. You know, whether it's priority slots, whether it's what stock to hold at each of the warehouse facilities, what mix of bikes and vans to use, what mix of delivery persons to use, and so on. So most of these were data-driven decisions. And I think that, I think, is the role of data science during this situation.
That's amazing. And tell me about, I guess the one thing I'm curious to understand is that it seems like your team was juggling between seeing what happened yesterday in the business, what changed, and what are the changes we need to make because of that. And then you're also saying, tomorrow I need to launch this new feature. So we need to do this forecasting analysis to figure this out. How are you breaking, I guess, responsibilities in the team between those different kinds of projects? How is the team sort of juggling these very different kind of, I guess, activities as well inside the team itself?
Again, I go back to the two things that I talked about earlier. One is the division of responsibilities is very clear. People know, you know, for example, on the business model that we internally call 5K, Pushpini is a good person. In fact, she probably understands this very, very well within the organization to the point of, you know, being seen as an internal expert in that business area. So any question that comes up on that topic in terms of assortment, in terms of vehicle mix, in terms of coverage, in terms of customer experience, she's the person to go to. Within that area, with her, the help of her team, she makes a call on what is priority. And obviously, having been in Big Basket, in the analytics world over the last 4 years, and knowing the stakeholders, clearly she knows the sense of urgency. What needs to get done now so that actions can be taken tonight, so that the customer experience improves tomorrow, versus what could be pushed out a day or two later, right? If the question is about what can I, you know, put in the assortment that will minimize the out of stock experience for customer, that takes priority over saying, what can I do that is more medium term, which will help reduce costs. And so he, you know, uses her experience and some of the thumb rules that we've developed over a period of time to make the call on what takes priority, what needs to get done now, and not what can get done later. So those two elements in terms of one, you know, clear division of responsibilities, and two, the team, pretty much everyone in the team that's been with us out of the new hire we brought on board about a couple of months ago, many time members have been with the organization for upwards of a year and a half, right? Pushpini is one of the most junior members. with 4+ years of experience. And so working with these stakeholders, having gone through this in other ways in terms of being able to judge priority, also helped in making those decisions.
No, that makes sense. And I think we've seen typically, even as we've studied data teams and cultures, we've seen that when, I guess, your data analyst or your scientist is actually directly mapped to the business, right? Where the ownership is not on the data project, but the ownership is on the business. I think it changes a lot in terms of just the ownership mindset, and helps, I guess, then from there trickle down, what should you prioritize? Because at the end of the day, it becomes what is going to have the maximum impact on the business.
Correct. In fact, within the team, we label our output as being, you know, analytics products and data science products, right? Analytics products in bulk of our time, because these are products that are used by the business and get applied immediately, while data science products are those products that go on the app or the website and help improve customer experience. A lot of the work done is on the analytics products, out of which comes the insights that sort of go into the data science products. And therefore, the focus on making this very applied, making this very definitive and useful by the business teams takes precedence over anything else.
And one last question, I think, associated with which is the crisis situation that the world is in and data leaders are sort of, and probably are going to be through the rest of 2020. What actionable advice do you have sort of data leaders that are building out their execution strategy over the next 3 to 6 months? Like, how should they be thinking about what to prioritize, and how should they be thinking about building out the strategy?
What do you push me?
Yeah. I think it's an interesting question, because most businesses, I would assume, would be facing some sort of an economic setback given business has changed, right? So I think this is possibly the best time for us to kind of look back on, you know, all the initiatives that we've taken in the past. And all too often, under normal circumstances, we get completely into executing and getting things on the ground that we may not necessarily have the time to really look back and analyze what is the ROI or return on investment on some of the initiatives that the company has taken. So I think now's the best time to do that. Look at all the historical initiatives that we've taken with respect to cost, with respect to customer satisfaction, customer experience, whatever the objective of the initiative was, right? Measure it up against that. And I think one thing that would apply to most businesses would be the cost to acquire new customers is something. It's an area for every business, right? This is the best time to really invest in quantifying that cost for different channels. You can use different kind of marketing campaigns. You can use different channels. You can use different modes, digital marketing or, just the regular TV, press and, radio marketing and so on. So in digital marketing, I believe acquisition is slightly more straightforward, but that's not the case for anything that's offline. So I think it's the best time to really build models that can accurately predict what was the impact of running some of these campaigns and look at the ROI and so on. And also given that, cash flow is going to be a little bit of an issue for most of 2020 for most businesses, I think it'll help the company, streamline budgets for, some of these things. So I think that's the value that we can provide. Also, if it's a business like ours where, supply chain and logistics plays a very important role, I'm sure this is the time we can also look at some of the opportunity costs, look at some revenue slippages, which may have developed as, new processes get added on top of, existing layers and so on. I think this is the value that data teams can add during this crisis situation. And it's actually quite an important role. So I think we should focus on that.
So I guess my biggest takeaways from both you and Mani are stay agile, plan week on week. And the second is try and basically find all the cost levers for the business and basically figure out how the business can drive more efficiency and basically make investments in a way that are more accurate and predictive.
Yeah,
that makes a lot of sense. Thank you so much. That brings us to sort of the close of today's episode. Thank you, Mani and Pushkarni, for joining us today and sharing your experience so candidly with the community. For all of those of you who are listening and watching, thank you for tuning in. You can watch a recording of this conversation on our website, www.atlin.com, or listen to it on our Humans of Data podcast, which is now streaming on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Breaker, and other major podcast apps. Stay tuned for details on our next episode and other freewheeling conversation, hopefully full of actionable insights just like this one. Take care and goodbye.